Hi, everybody. I'm Eric with a K, your trusted speaker getter for this Thursday night meeting that we have. Tonight is a very special night. Welcome to all the newcomers first, and happy birthday to everybody who took birthdays. That was absolutely stellar, just hearing you guys all share and stuff. So amazing. So our speaker for tonight is a gentleman that I've been getting to know a little bit better. You'd think, me being from Canada, that I would know all the Canadians that live there, but the truth is there's about 34 million or something like that of them. But anyway, Richard is one of those guys that I've kind of got to know a little bit better over the last couple of years as I've traveled a little bit to Canada and visited and stuff. And he's one of those guys that occasionally, if he's in town, if he's in LA, he'll come to our meeting and he'll share, and we share the same sponsor and we have that in common. And There just isn't conversations that I have with him that don't have some substance and weight to them. And I thought, oh man, our group really needs to hear his long pitch so that we can get to know him better, kind of the way I've been getting to know him. And so, you know, you're in for a real treat. Let me just introduce you. We have Richard I from Saskatoon. Richard, it's your time. Thanks.
Everybody, I'm a grateful and enthusiastic member of the Al-Anon family groups. My name is Richard Estes, and I'm really, I'm kind of humbled and honored at the same time here. This group holds a special place, the world famous 7 o'clock Let's Rock Al-Anon family group, which I was first introduced to through my sponsor. I'll tell you something, though, that almost from my first meeting, I have been a speaker tape junkie. And when I look through the archive of the speakers that you've had through this meeting, it's a who's who of some of the most inspirational speakers in Al-Anon, several of them on the screen tonight. And so when Eric contacted me and asked me to speak, and I'm looking at that list and thinking, me? You want me? And then I thought about it for a second. I was like, oh, right, April 1st. Gotcha. Okay. But he insisted this was for real. And even though I never quite bought it, I figured I better show up just in case. So here we are. I want to say welcome to all the newcomers. I'm an Al-Anon member who firmly believes that our fifth tradition says that you're the reason we have these meetings. Everything else that we do here, we could do in a coffee shop or kitchen table or on the phone. But what the meetings do is they give you some place to find us. And so we are really glad that you're here. And I want to welcome to the worldwide fellowship of people who love you just because you walked in the door. I want to express my resentment at all the birthday people who said all the good things that I've intended to say better than I was going to. And in particular, I want to say hi to Rick. Rick, in the last couple of weeks, I have talked to two different sponsees about stuff that came directly from you and talked about you to them. And it just feels special that bump into you here tonight on your 34th birthday. So congratulations to all of you. With that stuff out of the way, what we're asked to do when we do this is to share in a general way about what we were like, what happened to us, and what we're like today, with an emphasis on the tools of the program that we use to recover. So I'm going to try to do that. First thing I like to do is to qualify myself. Al-Anon's third tradition says that the only requirement for membership here is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or a friend. So I want to report to you that I'm qualified to be an Al-Anon member. I'm the son of two alcoholics. Both of my parents grew up in homes affected by alcoholism and went on to become alcoholics in their own right. My mother sobered up in AA a little over 25 years ago. My father never did find sobriety. He died a couple of years ago from the medical complications of his alcoholism. So I'm qualified to be an Al-Anon member because I'm the son of two alcoholics. I'm also qualified because I'm the grandson of alcoholics. I'm also the nephew of alcoholics. the brother of a couple of people whose drinking bothers me. I've got alcoholic cousins. Over the years, I've been the employee, the employer, and the coworker with a great number of alcoholics, sober and otherwise. And in my formative years, most of my friends drank like they were studying for the AA entrance exam. So this thing's followed me around pretty much all my life. And I need to report to you that not one of those problem drinkers in my life is the reason that I go to an Al-Anon meeting. They're not the reason I showed up at my first meeting, and they're not the reason I keep coming back. See, the first thing that Al-Anon taught me was something we call the three C's. The three C's say that I didn't cause someone else's alcoholism. I can't control someone else's alcoholism. And I can't cure someone else's alcoholism. And if those three things are true, that and I'm going to an Al-Anon meeting because of someone else's drinking, I'm kind of screwed. Because if I'm going because of someone else's drinking, the only way for me to get better is for them to stop. And the three C's just taught me that I can't make that happen. So I have never once gone to an Al-Anon meeting because of someone else's drinking. I've gone, as the saying goes, because I have a thinking problem. I've learned in Al-Anon that alcoholism and the family disease of alcoholism are a disease of perception. What they do is they change the way that the sufferer sees the world around them and the way that they respond to the stimulus that they're offered. It's a disease of perception. I think of it as the disease of I think I know stuff. Because the way that works is that I'll think I know something. I will believe that something deep in my heart. I'll make life-changing decisions based on this thing that I think I know, and I'll later find out that it wasn't true. My favorite illustration for that comes from my maternal grandfather, my Grandpa Smith. Grandpa Smith was a carpet layer by trade. He was a Friday night drinker. He was a feisty little guy. He had been a Golden Gloves boxer in his youth. He had these huge biceps. He kind of looked like Popeye. He was an angry drunk, and he was a car hunter. Now, I'm sure there's people on the meeting here who are familiar with car hunting, and I'm sure there's people who are wondering what the heck is he talking about. So I will elaborate. I get this story from my uncle, who was a teenager at the time that this was happening. And on more than one occasion, my uncle, being a teenager, on a Saturday morning, would be trying to sleep in. And he'd feel a tap on his shoulder. Bob, get up. What? Bob, get up. What? Bob, you got to get up. Dad, it's 6 o'clock Saturday morning. I'm trying to sleep. What do you want? Bob, you got to get up and you got to take me downtown. And you got to help me find my car before your mother gets up. And so what would happen is they would pile into my uncle's car and they would cruise the downtown Saskatoon looking for where my grandfather had lost his car the night before, usually within a couple blocks of the King George Hotel. They would go home and my grandfather would make breakfast. Now, I have it on the authority of my uncle that my grandfather died many years later, firmly believing my grandmother never suspected a thing. I find that hard to believe. I see from your expressions that some of you find that hard to believe. Here's what I think happened. I think my grandmother got up on a Saturday morning and she smelled bacon cooking and went, man, we lost the car again last night. But then she would do something really important. She would say nothing. Now, when I was growing up, nobody ever sat me down and said, Richard, this is the way the world works. And these are the things that we want you to know. But growing up in those families, I learned some things. One of the things that I learned was that if I screw up and you don't know about it, I'm okay. I also learned that if I screw it up and you know about it, but we don't talk about it, I'm okay. I was 40 years old and in Al-Anon when I discovered that those things weren't true. And yet that's how I had lived my life. I learned other things. I learned That love is conditional. I learned that what you want is more important than what I want. I learned that idea that it takes a village. I grew up at the intersection of three different families affected by alcoholism. Everything that I learned growing up about being a son, being a brother, being a husband, being a father, being a citizen, being a worker, being a neighbor, was taught to me by alcoholics and people who've been affected by alcoholics. And while I know today that not one of them ever got up in the morning and said, how can we screw Richard up today? Every single one of them offered me the very best they had. I know today that the very best they had wasn't very good. But I took what I learned in that environment out into the wider world, and that went about as you'd expect. It just did not go well. I did what is kind of predictable for adult children. We seem to end up with two kinds of people pretty frequently. We marry alcoholics or we marry each other. We settle down to make each other sicker. So I found myself a woman from another sick family in the spring of 1983, I stood at the front of an Anglican church in an army dress green uniform with an honor guard outside, knowing that I'd realized 2-3 months earlier, I dislike this woman. Like, I don't even like her. But you know, the invitations had already gone out. How would I look if I backed out? And so I followed through to a marriage to a woman I didn't like, and settled into a marriage where I hated every second of it. And what's interesting to me is that 5 years later, when that marriage broke up, because I was objecting to her cocaine use, I'm not the one that ended it. That was her decision. And I wept to lose this marriage to a woman I didn't like in a marriage that I hated. I ended up talking to a counselor, and the counselor gave me that advice that so many of us are familiar with. Richard, you're hurting and you need to heal, and you should take a break from relationships for, everybody knows, 1 year. So about a year and a day later, I met another sick woman from another sick family and pursued her to the gates of insanity or death. We met and I fell in love and we had a baby and got married in precisely that order. In this case, when we stood in our backyard to exchange vows, we promised to love, honor, and cherish each other. And I know today that, on the day that happened, she didn't mean it. And I didn't know what it meant. So we weren't going anywhere good at that point. I've learned in Al-Anon that alcoholism is a chronic and progressive and ultimately fatal illness. I've also learned that the family disease of alcoholism is progressive in its nature. And for me, what that looked like was, little by little, my world got smaller. And the way it looked was discarding people from my life through resentment or fear or embarrassment. It looked like that there's this completely unacceptable situation in my home. I can't stand it for another damn minute, but it's only until March. And now that's my new normal. And I would never allow this thing to happen. I'll never accept that. Well, okay, just this once. And now it's the new normal. And little by little, my world got smaller and smaller and smaller. What finally happened was things started getting worse faster than I could lower my standards, and I had a nervous breakdown. And I ended up on the couch of a therapist who recognized what he was dealing with, who basically said to me, you, sir, are a lifetime project, and I want to retire someday. Please go see these people. and I ended up going to my first Al-Anon meeting. The other thing I'll share with you is just a little bit before that, we were in a counseling session, and it hadn't gone well, and she'd stormed out. And the counselor said to me, "Richard, I want you to know something. Whether she stays or whether she leaves, ultimately you can be happy." And I looked that man in the eye and I said to him, "I don't want to be happy if it means I can't be with her." You want to just think about that thinking for a second? I looked back at that today and it's like, who is that guy and why was he making decisions about my life? I ended up at my first meeting and I cried all the way through that first meeting. That's one of the first things that Al-Anon gave me, was a safe place to cry. Because at the end of that meeting, nobody criticized me. Nobody made fun of me. Nobody even looked sideways at this 40-year-old guy who was crying like a little kid. And I mean, all the way through the meeting, I cried for a solid hour at levels that would drown out the people that were trying to share. And nobody said a thing. At the end of the meeting, they hugged me and they told me they loved me in a very special way and they asked me to come back next week. And that was my first encounter with unconditional love in a very long time. And it hooked me into coming back. My my first Al-Anon group was the Foundation's Al-Anon Family Group in Saskatoon. It was an adult children group. And the thing that sets an adult children Al-Anon group apart from any regular Al-Anon group is very little. Usually at the beginning of the meeting, somewhere in the meeting format, we read something that speaks to the experience of growing up in the family disease of alcoholism. That's it. That's the only change in the format. And apart from that, you tend to see most, but not all, the people who attend as people who grew up in immersed in alcoholism. Some people just show up because they like that meeting or because it fits their schedule. But at this particular meeting, the thing that they read every week was a particular pamphlet that has become one of the cornerstones of my recovery. And I'd like to share with you what they were reading to me every week. See if this sounds like anybody that you've met recently. It's this pamphlet here, pamphlet S25, if anybody's interested. "Did you grow up with a problem drinker? Al-Anon is for you. Al-Anon is for families, relatives, and friends whose lives have been affected by someone else's drinking. If someone close to you, such as a family member, friend, co-worker, or neighbor, has or has had a drinking problem, the following questions may help you to determine if Al-Anon is for you. Do you constantly seek approval and affirmation? Do you fail to recognize your accomplishments? Do you fear criticism? Do you overextend yourself? Have you had problems with your own compulsive behavior? Do you have a need for perfection? Are you uneasy when your life is going smoothly, continually anticipating problems? Do you feel more alive in the midst of a crisis? Do you feel responsible for others as you did for the problem drinker in your life? Do you care for others easily, yet find it difficult to care for yourself? Do you isolate yourself from other people? Do you respond with fear to authority figures and angry people? Do you feel that individuals and society in general are taking advantage of you? Trouble with intimate relationships? Do you confuse pity with love as you did with the problem drinker? Do you attract or seek people who tend to be compulsive or abusive? Do you cling to relationships because you're afraid of being alone? Do you often mistrust your own feelings and the feelings expressed by others? Do you find it difficult to identify and express your emotions? Do you think someone's drinking may have affected you?" It seemed to me that somebody had been following me around. Like, it seemed awfully, awfully suspicious that I would walk into a meeting and they would have this character study of Richard waiting for me. And then I checked the copyright date on the thing, and it was 20 years before my first meeting. That seemed weird. Now, step one says we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. For me, I had a little trouble with that. You know, when I got to Al-Anon, my mother had been sober for a few years. My father was on one of those intermittent periods where he was just out of my life. I hadn't been exposed to active alcoholism in some time. So when I heard other Al-Anon members talking about, you know, step one means that we're powerless over the alcoholic. Big deal. Or we're powerless over the effects of alcohol on the alcoholic. Who cares? I knew that when I was 8 years old. Like, what's that got to do with me? What this did for me was it made it personal. What I discovered in step one is that I'm powerless over the ways that I've been affected by someone else's alcoholism. See, these patterns of behavior and belief that apparently are common to people who grew up in a home affected by alcoholism were things that I'd known about myself for a very long time. And I had hated about myself for a very long time. And I had tried to change them all. You know, I would take the holy oath. You know, I will never again kowtow that to somebody just because they got angry at me. Never going to do it ever again. And I wouldn't until the next time I did. And that's what I discovered, is that in step one, I'm powerless over the ways I've been affected by the family disease of alcoholism. What was interesting to me is that, and I heard it said by one of the birthday people, I showed up unique. Unique in a way that was going to kill me. And I found myself in a room full of people who were all unique the same way. Now, up until that point, living my life, my world had got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And it shrunk to me and the angry little brunette who was the center of my obsessions. And not only was she leaving, but she was praying for me to die. And I suddenly found myself in a room full of people that I shared this with. And my world got just a little bit bigger. And that's what's happened for me all the way through this process. Everything that we do here, every one of the steps, the traditions, the slogans, the tools of the program, like the phone list and my sponsor, all work in direct opposition to the effects of my illness by making my world a little bit bigger at a time. I've learned that what step one does for me is it makes step two necessary. Step one ultimately is in every 12-step fellowship is this statement of a common problem. It says, I've got a problem so big, it's beyond my capacity to solve and it's rendering my life unmanageable. If step one is true, I need step two to be true or I'm screwed, because if I don't have the power to solve that problem, I need a power greater than mine. And what happened for this lifelong agnostic was it in the second step, the people in those rooms carefully and gently introduced me to a loving higher power of my own understanding. I sit before you today, an agnostic with a higher power. All agnostic means is I don't know. I don't know what it is that I talk to every day. I don't know its nature, and it's not important to me at this point. I know enough. I know that there's something out there that seems to be smarter than me and wiser than me and more powerful than me. And for reasons I don't understand, it seems to be absolutely crazy about me. And that's all I need to know. Second step makes the third step possible. The second step for me made the third step a no-brainer. Me running my life got me a nervous breakdown in 12-step meetings. It was time for someone else to be in charge. I've come to believe that the third step is the program. The third, in a nutshell, it is the entire point of what we do here. Everything else is about the third step. One and two are about getting me to this decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of a loving higher power. And I don't know how to do that. I haven't got a clue. And that's why this isn't a three-step program. Four through 12 are all about learning to better implement that decision that I made. The inventory steps are about clearing away, identifying and clearing away the obstacles that get in between me and the will of my higher power. The amend steps are about letting go of the shame and the guilt that over the things that I've done in the past, and being able to walk through my life with integrity and dignity the way a loving higher power would have me do. The 10th step's the insurance step. It's the step where I watch Richard go through my day and keep an eye on him, because those defects of character haven't gone away. I've just got a little space from them. And watching for those and cleaning up the wreckage of my present when it happens, dealing with it now instead of letting it grow and fester the way that I used to. The 11th step is about taking the time to establish a conversation with my higher power and striving for conscious contact. But it's more than that for me. I mentioned that angry little brunette that was leaving when I got to my first meeting. She never quite got out the door. And after I had been here for a little while, growing and changing, it got her attention. Actually, it really bugged her. Apparently, there's nothing worse than somebody in the house is growing spiritually and it's not you. And so she decided she better check out this Al-Anon thing. And she stuck. And, you know, today she works a hell of a program. And she is one of the biggest inspirations in my life. She sponsors a legion of women. But most importantly to me, in the morning, I get to share my 11th step with the lady that I share my life with. We get up in the morning and just 15 or 20 minutes, we sit down, we have coffee, and we do some spiritual readings together. And I'll tell you, that's some distance from what we used to do in the mornings. Our morning routine has changed dramatically. The 12th step says that having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. More than anything, the 12th step is a call to sponsorship. But to carrying a message to anyone in any form, I like what Ellen C. says, in AA, step 12 says that they carry the message to alcoholics. We get the tough job. We have everybody else. And what happens for me is that every once in a while, some guy walks into my home group and, you know, he's fallen apart and he's bleeding and the sky is falling and he just doesn't know which way to turn. And he'll come up to me and he'll say, I like what I see in your life. Would you please show me how you got that? And I get to walk through this process with that guy. And I get the privilege of watching the light come on in his eyes. Now, when I got here I was dying a day at a time. I said that the I was married to a woman who was praying for me to die. Well, I didn't really want to live anymore, so at least we had something in common. And today we get invited to do workshops on healthy relationships, and I don't know how you get from the one to the other, other than through the miracles that happen here. Something that I'm really grateful for is early in recovery, I was introduced to the idea of our 12 traditions as tools for relationship. My wife was introduced to that same idea at about the same time. And the idea that if you dig into the principles underlying those traditions, at the end of the day, what they're about is helping difficult people get along with each other. And we started applying those principles in our marriage. And it worked. You know, 3 years later, we were coming up on our 10th wedding anniversary, and we decided that we still liked each other and we wanted to renew our vows. But we didn't want to use the original vows that we'd exchanged, because apparently those weren't working. And so we rewrote our vows based on the 12 traditions. We call it our 12 commitments. So I get to be somebody who has a primary purpose in his marriage. You know, our marriage has but one purpose: to serve as an expression of our higher power's love. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by encouraging and nurturing each other's growth, and by welcoming and loving our friends and family. What that means is that it affects everything that we do. You know, our second commitment, the second tradition, says that we take the third step together when we make big decisions. As some of you know, some years ago, 7 years ago now, I guess, we moved to Winnipeg from Saskatoon. That was a huge thing. I remember phoning Jack after we'd done a scouting trip to Winnipeg. He was like, "Jack, the Al-Anon in Winnipeg sucks. They half the meetings are in the entire city are on Monday and Tuesday. There are no weekend meetings." And his answer was, "Richard, that sounds like a target-rich environment." So we moved there. And it really sucked. We ended up having to start a meeting just to have a good one. But when I phoned to complain to Jack about it, it was, "Why do you think I sent you there?" Thanks, Jack. And then 5 years later, it was time to come home. And what's happened is that our world's got so much bigger. Because that 5 years that we spent in Winnipeg, we spent adding to our family of choice. We have friends, recovery friends and sponsees, just like thick on the ground in Winnipeg. And now we're back in Saskatoon. And we're home with the family that raised us in this fellowship. What's happened for me is that as a result of doing the things that they recommended here, doing the things that the people who had what I wanted had done, my life's been transformed. And if you look at my life from a great distance, it really doesn't look that different. You know, I'm still married to the same woman. I'm still doing the same kind of work. I've still got those same kids who were terrified of me because I was this angry workaholic who would come home and scream at them. But, you know, today, those kids aren't afraid of me. Yeah. Today, I love what I do for a living. Today, that marriage to that angry little brunette who refused to be happy no matter how hard I tried to make her be happy, today that marriage is one of the central joys in my life. So while the circumstances of my life aren't that different, what's changed is the way that I get to experience those things. And it's a result of engaging in the broken record. Come to the meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps. Come to the meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps. Come to the meetings, get a sponsor. Oh, and by the way, work the steps. Everything good in my life has been a result of that. The best summary I've ever heard, and I'll close with this. I was in a meeting in Montana some years ago, and they had a newcomer. And at that particular group, they had a custom that when they had a newcomer, they would throw out whatever tonight's topic was. And the topic simply becomes why we came and why we keep coming back. And a guy across the room from me put it entirely into perspective. What he shared was, I came because my son was drinking and drugging and I didn't know what to do. I keep coming back because I'm learning to be a better man. That's what's happened for me. So this fellowship saved my life. I believe that the 12 steps saved my sanity and the 12 traditions saved my marriage. And the only price that you guys seem to ask for that is that every once in a while I take a phone call in the middle of the night or get up in front of a group of strangers and cry for a bit. And if that's the price tag going forward, I'm vastly overpaid. I love you all. Thank you for letting me share.